challenging. We have, I think we have one more question. Yes, ma'am.
What do you attribute to the fact that we haven't been hit since 9/11?
Why have we not been hit by since 9/11, which is a good question. My first answer is I honestly don't know. I would have expected another attack, and I particularly thought, I was very, very worried and talked to the administration when we had the sniper attacks, because the sniper attacks were psychologically so frightening to the average person because of their randomness, that I thought, I was amazed that the bad guys didn't figure out how to send 10 or 12 sniper teams. I think there are a couple things, though, that we tend not... This is, by the way, one of the great tragedies of the Bush administration. The more successful they've been at intercepting and stopping bad guys, the less proof there is that we're in danger. And therefore, the better they've done at making sure there isn't an attack, the easier it is to say, well, there was never going to be an attack anyway. And it's almost like they should every once in a while have allowed an attack to get through just to remind us. But then think about the psychology. You know, why did we wrap up so many people? Well, because we wiretapped. And again, I'm going to be a little controversial. I would divide the FBI into two agencies. I would have an anti-domestic crime FBI, which was very cautious, very respectful of civil liberties. You were innocent until proven guilty. And I would have a small but very aggressive anti-terrorism agency. And I would frankly give them extraordinary ability to eavesdrop. And my first advice to civil libertarians is simple. Don't plot with terrorists. Because the only information that I would allow to be admissible by this agency would be information related to terrorism. But if you ask me, am I prepared to be very aggressive in order to avoid a nuclear weapon going off in New York or a biological weapon going off in Boston? My answer is yeah. I think that it is very important that we recognize the nature of the modern world. We recognize how sophisticated some of our opponents are getting. And we stay ahead of them with a relentless intensity, which I do not want to see any domestic police department have. Because I think your liberties in a domestic setting are paramount. I would rather risk crime than risk losing my civil liberties. But I would not rather risk a nuclear weapon. And I think it's very important. And I think the greatest danger to our liberty is to actually have the country end up in the kind of attack that would lead us to favor a dictatorship for security. And the history of human beings is simple. Human beings do not like living in periods where they are deeply threatened. And if the democracy can't protect them, they will shift towards a dictatorship. So I want a democracy which is very protective of your civil liberties for crime and very relentless in pursuing terrorists to protect you from terrorism. And I think candidly, the Bush administration, despite all the attacks on it and the mistakes they've made, and I certainly disagree with how they handled Iraq after the first campaign, which was brilliant, and I thought had they listened carefully to Ambassador Khalilzad and General Petraeus in 2003, we frankly would have probably won the war and been over a long time ago. But having said that, on the stopping terrorism front, someday, 50 years from now, somebody will have access to the documents and will write a history that will show that George W. Bush did a lot more to protect this country successfully than anybody knows at the present time. Yes. Thank you all very much. Let's sign books.
And there you have it. Newt Gingrich issuing a terror threat and talking about how glorious dictatorship is. Now that that's done, let's talk presidential politics with Webster Tarpley.
We've got three candidates, unfortunately Mrs. Clinton, but emphatically Obama and McCain, who accept this lunatic Malthusian global warming thesis.
Yes.
And propose carbon tax, cap and trade, God knows what else. It's a straitjacket, it's a block universe, it's just a Hobson's choice. But now we have Bob Barr, and apparently the thing that might be interesting to many people about Bob Barr is he doesn't seem to accept the global warming fraud. Is that correct?
Hi, Webster, yes, that is correct. McCain has been a leader, as you mentioned, over the years. He had the McCain-Lieberman legislation, which failed, but it was one of these restrictive, I guess they call it cap-and-trade type mechanisms where, you know, we're only going to produce so much carbon dioxide as a country, and then all the big well-connected companies will get what they call these carbon credits that they can trade among themselves. But any kind of new manufacturing operation, a firm or plant or whatever, would have a very, very hard time getting into this cartel and building anything. And so now we have the new legislation is called Lieberman-Warner. And McCain gave a big speech a couple weeks ago about his global warming plans, which sounds a lot like Lieberman-Warner. And there's even I just saw there's a new study out predicting at least 500,000 jobs lost per year after a Lieberman-Warner-McCain type plan would go into effect. So you're going to have Congressman Barr running to the right on the global warming issue, as well as other small government issues and gun rights, and he'll also be very big on the civil liberties issue. And of course, that all assumes that the nomination holds together. The Libertarian Party has been very fractious, and the nomination's been controversial. So, you know, you might have some state Libertarian parties that kind of go off the reservation and nominate someone else. So we're going to have to see how that pans out. But as far as the Malthusian issues you talked about on this show, it looks like Barr will be the only anti-Malthusian candidate, unless I'm not that familiar with Cynthia McKinney's platform. So as a Green, you would think she would be for these kinds of things, but that might be wrong. So.
Well, that's very interesting. And again, what I think is important is that we've got a controlled environment of mass brainwashing. We've got the block universe of man-made global warming. We're getting reports basically every week of warming phenomena on other planets, from Mars to Jupiter to the satellites of Jupiter. It is a matter of solar activity, not of human agency. I wondered, in libertarian circles that you watch, Obama made this tirade in Oregon about 2 weeks ago now, saying you're not going to be able to have your SUV, you're not going to be able to eat as much as you want, you're not going to be able to set your thermostat at 72 degrees, winter and summer, desert and tundra, and think that other countries will accept it, and we've got to prevent the carbon footprint of India and China from expanding to a U.S.-style level. Any reaction to that? I mean, are people seeing the tremendous threat of Obama as a green fanatic?
Yeah, yes. People have taken notice of that. Some of the more popular sites, LewRockwell.com, which is closely affiliated with Ron Paul, they definitely took notice of that. And, you know, a lot of people are scared. As you mentioned, and he's got all of Carter's people with him, which, of course, that was when we had energy rationing here in the U.S. The last time was under Carter, 30 years ago in Brzezinski. So this is going to be an issue that the Libertarian Party is going to have all to themselves in the fall, barring I don't know what, but, so as we go on, and it looks like both the big conventions could be quite fractious, with Obama, Hillary, and even Ron Paul's people making some kind of noise at the McCain coronation.
Very interesting. Now, you mentioned that there's the possibility of revolts by state libertarian parties against Barr. I mean, I just don't know anything about that. Could you just fill us in on what that might be?
Well, we had... for instance, 8 years ago, there was the Arizona Libertarian Party, which refused to nominate the national ticket. And as far as the Libertarian ticket this year goes, you have, you know, just many hardcore old-line Libertarians are distrustful of Barr because of his, you know, they say he's a Republican, he's coming from outside, he's trying to take over the party, and, you know, his conversion on things like marijuana has been has been too recent, and some of that's been compounded by the vice presidential candidate who, you know, just a year ago was a kind of more of a neocon-type warmonger on foreign policy, and this guy Root, the Las Vegas odds maker, and that kind of compounded some of the resentment. So it remains to be seen whether or not the party can hold together. What some of the more old-time people, what some are calling the Radical Caucus, did get control of the Libertarian National Committee. So there is going to be some kind of balance there, and it might not fall apart as much as it could, but you never know.
So tell us again, who is the vice presidential candidate with the full name and some background?
His name is Wayne Allen Root, and he's this guy from Las Vegas. He's basically very much into, you know, sports betting and online. I don't know all the details, but he's very much in these gambling businesses. His big pitch was that somehow he would magically get 20 million online poker players to all vote for the Libertarian Party because, you know, the Republicans banned online gambling a couple of years ago. And this guy was a Republican until then, much longer than Congressman Barr was. So that's where he's coming from, you know, kind of the more hawkish part of the Libertarian Party, which is, you know, very odd. It's still a rump group in the party, but they are there, what you would call maybe the Neil Gortz caucus, if you're familiar with that guy.
Would mean what, flat tax or some kind of...
The difference is more in the foreign policy issue than the tax issue. Barr is a sales tax, fair tax position right now. So the Root caucus is more hardcore supporters. You would call them more hawkish on foreign policy, and it's kind of a puzzle why they're even in the Libertarian Party in the first place. But that's the state of things.
And just one historical note. You said 8 years ago the Arizona Libertarians rejected the national ticket. What was that? Who was the national ticket 8 years ago?
It was Harry Brown, who was a host on GCN, I think, for several years. He passed away a couple of years ago. He was the nominee in 1996 and 2000. I can't even recall what it was that state party didn't like about him, but... and he was much less controversial as a so-called pure libertarian, sorry about the noise, than Barr was. And there are also elements of the Libertarian Party. There's a large gay caucus, and they were very distrustful of Barr because of the marriage issue, even though he's made some amends. But you know, several people who will be on the elector slate, you know, from Massachusetts and such, have declared their intention to be faithless electors. So we could have faithless conventions and faithless electors this fall. And the party realignment you spoke of definitely...
So, Stan, we got to break off 1 second. Come back in a minute and wrap up.
Okay.
Back to our second hour here on World Crisis Radio. We want to remind everybody listening in on Saturday, May 31st, that there's a very significant protest against the corrupt Democratic machine bosses and Wall Street stooges at the Marriott Wardman Park Hotel, 2660 Woodley Road, Northwest Washington, D.C. Go to the Metro at Woodley Park Zoo and join the protest. We're just finishing up our talk with very well-informed source Jay on Capitol Hill about the Bob Barr Libertarian candidacy and what interesting effects might come out of this. So can you wrap up, James? How do you see all this playing out? Hello?
Move.
Yes.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. How do you do you see it all playing out?
Well, as far as the general election, or
just Barr. I mean, what can he do? What do you think he's going to be capable of?
Well, it's going to be a lot of going to happen with.
Source J, you're breaking up. Hello. Hello. I'm afraid we're losing Source J. Yeah, we're going to give this a little bit of a try so he can finish up. He is in a difficult environment up there on Capitol Hill. Okay. In the meantime, let me just see here. In our second hour, let's just talk a little bit about some other of these Obama networks, because we're now getting some stuff in depth. There's a writer by the name of Mel who posted a very interesting profile of Bernardine Dorn and Bill Ayers on the Larry Johnson No Quarter USA website. And this is a discussion of the networks that have produced Obama. And from the point of view of Mel at the No Quarter USA website, the dominant figure in these networks is someone who is no longer alive. He died last year, and that is Thomas Ayers, the father of the weatherman terrorist Bill Ayers, husband of weather girl terrorist Bernardine Dorn. And Thomas Ayers was the head of Chicago Edison. He was the Consolidated Edison of Chicago, meaning the power company. But he also appears to be a person with comprehensive intelligence community connections. He seems to be sort of a spiritus rector, that is, a dominant personality of the Chicago establishment, obviously kicking over then, since it's the U.S., kicking over into the area of the intelligence community networks, the social control networks, and, of course, this community control stuff. The Chicago Community Trust, big connections to Thomas Ayers. The Joyce Foundation, the Woods Fund. We've even got the MacArthur Foundation, right? Obama working for the Woods Fund. Obama apparently working also for the Joyce Foundation. We've followed that on these broadcasts. Obama is a creature of the foundation world, dominated in the last analysis by the Ford Foundation. Are we back? Source J, you want to just wrap up quickly?
Yeah. Sorry about that. I was just trying to say, I think a lot of it is going to depend on who the ultimate nominees are. You know, if you have Obama get the Democrat nomination, a lot of the manufacturing class, especially if Barr plays this global warming issue and related issues the right way, could go to Barr. And so we're going to have to see how that plays out, and if, you know, the campaign is going to raise enough money and spend it wisely enough, maybe in some libertarian-leaning states like Alaska or something, to actually get a few electors on the ballot in a three- or four-way race. And then, on the other hand, if Hillary gets the Democrat nomination, I don't know, then it could go Barr could play up more the civil liberties angle in foreign policy, where a lot of people are attracted to Obama because of his promises on that front. So it could be interesting. A lot of it depends on, you know, how wisely they use the money. There's the criticism of the Ron Paul campaign for not using the money they had very well and targeting the wrong demographic groups and that sort of thing.
Source J, one last question. Concerning the Ron Paul voters and the Ron Paul movement, because there was something of a movement with Ron Paul, where do you see them going right now? Are they going to be interested in Barr, or are they going to somehow go to the Republican convention with Ron Paul and leave it at that?
Well, there definitely is going to be something going on through the convention. We still have Ron Paul's people electing delegates at state conventions and having the GOP, you know, party hands running scared. Nevada might not even send a delegation to the convention because they're still afraid that they can't elect a delegation that won't be all Ron Paul supporters. So Nevada might not even be represented at the convention. As far as what happens after that, you know, they could go. I think a lot of them will go to Barr. Some will go to Chuck Baldwin, the Constitution Party. And you might have some that go to Obama if Obama's on the ballot. You know, younger Ron Paul voters who aren't necessarily as conservative as Paul might be, but are really focused on ending the war and protecting civil liberties. And for whatever reason, Obama still has credibility on that with a lot of people.
The reason, of course, is gullibility and the endless willingness of human beings to be duped, I guess. Anyway, I want to thank Source J. We've got to push on. Thank you very much. We hope to hear from you in the coming weeks on these issues and others.
Bye.
Thanks to Source J on Capitol Hill.
Okay.
And let me now continue. We were just talking about Bernardine Dorn and...
We lost audio. Of course, we were listening to a pre-recorded conversation with Webster Tarpley, and the event that Tarpley mentioned did occur last Saturday at the Marriott Wardman Park Hotel, the DNC rules meeting. And there was a special guest that showed up among the pro-Hillary protesters outside. This is from the New Republic, TNR.com, on June 2nd, 2008. Larry Sinclair, the Minnesota man, who took to YouTube to allege that Barack Obama had oral sex with him in the back of a limousine in 1999, is one of the belles of the ball. Quote, "They almost made me cry this morning when they told me to get out of there," the blonde Sinclair, who's looking roly-poly and giddy in a blue and white striped shirt with a pack of Marlboros protruding from the breast pocket, says, referring to several nervous protest organizers who tried to evict him when he first showed up at the rally site early this morning, carrying a box of flyers reading, "Obama's Dirty Little Secrets, Murder, Drugs, Gay Sex." Since then, though, he goes on, "I have been totally surprised by the reception I have received." He's not kidding. Clusters of people in Hillary shirts asked to take their photo with him. One woman covered in Clinton buttons introduces him to Greta Van Susteren, and he estimates he has handed out 500 flyers. One lady says, "You could improve your credibility if you downplayed the gay sex and focused on the drugs," sagely advises one Hillary supporter with auburn hair and elegant makeup. But in this universe, Sinclair's credibility doesn't seem to be suffering too much. In fact, he's treated nearly as well as he might be at a meeting of the vast right-wing conspiracy. In the 30 minutes I stand with him, only one woman expresses disgust at his flyers and his willingness to chattily discourse on whether Obama is good in bed. Moving on. Justine, a self-described die-hard Democrat from Greensboro, North Carolina, and her friends got Sinclair to autograph their copies of the Murder, Drugs, Gay Sex flyer. One of those friends, Jeannie, is living proof that, at least for some people, the long primary has done its damage. She explains, "When Obama first came out, we just thought he was too young. But now I don't think he's qualified at all." Jeannie, the Greensboro Democrat, asks a fellow in a floppy hat, "Would you rather have a president who had an affair, Bill Clinton, or one who was a murderer?" Referring to Obama. "That's a good point," he replies. So there you go, Larry Sinclair. And he's got a website. He needs a proper domain name, but if you just Google Larry Sinclair, you'll find it. And to follow up on that bit of news, let's listen to Pastor James David Manning from Harlem, who says he's got the inside dirt on the... Trinity Church in Obama. Of course, Obama resigned from the church
on Saturday.
There's a television reporter named Jack Cafferty. He sits there trying to be cool. He wants to be in, and he's supporting Obama because he thinks that makes him look like he's in and down with the crowd. I would say to Jack Cafferty, if you want to be in, go buy yourself. Take off them Sears shirts you wear and them cheap ties and get yourself a decent tie and a shirt and have somebody cut your hair if you want to be in. And then Senator Robert Byrd the other day came out. He used to be a member of the Ku Klux Klan, Robert Byrd of West Virginia. Yeah, used to be a member of the Ku Klux Klan. He came out the other day and endorsed Obama. He realized he's getting ready to kick the bucket, especially now since Ted Kennedy, since God has visited Ted Kennedy with a great tumor, cancer on his head. Robert Byrd has now endorsed Obama so he can try to erase in his legacy his hatred for black folk. It's nothing but a sham and a show. These are the facts. There's no doubting it. I challenge you to disprove anything I have said here that is not correct. No one, when you've got as many people in America today in the Catholic and Jewish communities who believe that Barack Hussein Obama is the Antichrist, should not be allowed to run for political office. I mean, that should disqualify him more so than the Jeremiah Wright issue, more so than the William Ayers issue, more so than the Larry Sinclair issue. Of Larry Sinclair alleging that Barack Hussein Obama asked him to give him a sexual mouth-to-mouth oral sex job in the back of a limousine and they smoked crack cocaine in the process of it. More so than that, more so than Michelle Obama saying that I just began to love America now that my husband is running for president. More so than that, the fact that people actually believe that he is the Antichrist, he should be dismissed and not allowed even to run. Based on that, and when people think that level of evil against you, you need to be carefully examined. And the other item is this I want to say about Obama is that the world media and American media, pardon me, and the world media too, has become the handmaiden for the devil because they are cloaking for Obama. They are cloaking for him. They are running rumors and stories against the Clintons and against the campaign. They are yeasting up. They are cloaking for this man because his liberal views are their liberal views. They want to destroy America. They want to see partial birth abortions. Obama is for partial birth abortions, killing a baby that's already been born. He is and has stated that if he becomes president, he will expand the abortion rights whereby they can never be repealed. And at any stage you want to abort a child, it will be done and there will be no questions about it. He is the most liberal senator ever to grace the halls of our hallowed Congress. He is an awful and wicked man. So I taught a message about 4 months ago, and I likened Barack Hussein Obama, that emissary of the devil who's come here to try to destroy the word of God, the work of God, and the people of God. I liken him to the young Roman emperor called Little Boots. His name is Caligula. He was raised on the island of Capri. His mother was Germanicus. He had a great father in battle, and he became the emperor of Rome at the death of Caesar Augustus. And he was worshipped as a young man, handsome, and immense crowds gathered, just like they do around Obama. And when they put Caligula Little Boots into office as emperor of Rome, everything was calm for 6 months. People were partying. They thought that the greatest thing that ever happened to Rome had happened to them. And within 6 months period, Caligula, the madness that was in him began to unfold. The demons that were in him came out, and executions started taking place in Rome just for taking the baths on the day that Drusilla, his sister, died, and he declared a week, a month of mourning, and no one could laugh, no one could take a bath, and if anyone took a bath, they were executed, and he spent all of Rome's money. The nation of Rome went broke under his spending. Parties, Caligula would call a party of all of his cabinet staff, his secretary of state, vice presidents, and everybody, have a great big meal, everybody would drink, and then Caligula would pick out one of his staff members' wife and say, come with me to my bedroom, have sex with her, and there was nothing that could be done to stop it. He would have sex with her and then come back to the dinner party, and no one could leave until the sexual affair was over with. He'd come back to the dinner party and say, well, this is how she is in bed, this is what she does, this is what I like about her, this is what I don't like, right in front of her husband, Caligula. For 4 years, he was a madman running Rome. And I'm saying that Obama is the same person. I posted that on YouTube. But, you know, very few people went to see my intellectual side. Very few people went to hear me explain from a historical, intellectual point of view without the strong language, without the name calling, which is what I did there with the Caligula posting. So the truth of the matter is this, is that unless language is used to wake people up, most people don't have the intellectual strengths or the historical understanding in a social way to appreciate Caligula and my example, or comparing him to Barack Hussein Obama. They really like the pouring piss out of the boots. They like that. They do. Now, I don't do it because they do. I speak it because they do, but I want you to know I have posted other teachings. I've likened Barack to James Brown, and people don't go there. I have taught that Barack's Hussein Obama's father deserted him at 6 months old, never sent another dime to buy milk or diapers, and gave him no emotional support, just deserted him. And I have said that 70% of all black men in America desert their children the same way Barack Hussein Obama deserts his children. Father deserted Barack, that is to say. And I've said to Barack, you ought to make that a part of your campaign to stop this desertion of little children having to be raised up by their grandparents because their mother and father were no good. And why don't you talk to these all these black men that are voting for you, but 77 out of every 10 of the black men that vote for you have children that they're not supporting, that they don't pay child support. That's not popular. And not one person has, well, a couple of women have written to me and told me, you're right, Pastor Manning, because that man left me to raise this child by myself. But, you know, y'all don't pay any attention to that. But I have taught in ways that are honorable. In fact, all of my teaching, even the pouring the piss out of the boot, and Obama is trash, and he is trash. He's the trashiest thing I've seen coming or going. But you don't pay attention to that. And so why don't you go to YouTube and look at those postings of Obama's don't pay child support, or like Obama, like Caligula. Go and like Obama and like James Brown, or trickle down economics by Obama. Go and listen to those, and you will see that I have been balanced about this. You just haven't been balanced in appreciating what we have been able to express. So I'm here preaching. And my friends, I'm going to tell you something. The day is going to come when you're going to realize that Pastor Manning was a lone voice crying out in the wilderness of planet Earth, warning the world about this evil homosexual hater of God, blasphemer of the Word of God, and hater of the foundation of America, and a confessing Muslim named Barack Hussein Obama. And all of these other preachers went hook, line, and sinker for him, and only Pastor Manning stood up and spoke the truth about him in the face of the adversity of all of these black people who have gone a-whoring after this man. And I'll say to you that you ought to begin to stand up in your churches today, immediately stop this man from destroying the Word of God. Stop him from destroying our future with Jesus Christ. Stop him from destroying the unborn babies. Stop him from allowing gay marriages to happen all over America, because he will install it. Stop it now. Stand up. Stop it. Stop this Satan worship. This is nothing but Satan worship of Barack Hussein Obama. I am Pastor James David Manning.
All right, and now Beck with his new song, Chemtrails.
Thank you.
have a caller from Minnesota who wanted to talk about the Republican convention over there and what happened as far as the McCain hacks shutting everything down. Welcome to the show.
How's it going?
Pretty good. So tell us tell us what happened.
Well, are you familiar with what happened at all? Or?
I read a little bit about it. I heard basically that the Ron Paul people had a lot of delegates at the state convention and that I guess the McCain people who were running the convention threw a bunch of the rules out the window and just kind of railroaded the process through to get all McCain delegates. I don't know about too many of the details, though, so fill us in, please.
Yeah, well, basically, in a nutshell, all the Ron Paul people are very, very active throughout the process all over the country, and so we went to the caucus, and we got our people elected in the caucus, and then we went to the district convention and got our people elected at the district, and, we had a lot of momentum going to the state convention, and we did everything we were supposed to. Basically, at the state convention, there should have been about 100 delegates that we were able to vote for. And there was a lot of Ron Paul supporters on, and we all knew who they were. And then we're going to vote for, about 30% of the convention was going to vote for who the Ron Paul delegates were.
30%?
So basically, what's that?
Did you say 30%?
Yeah, well, I would say roughly.
Okay.
Roughly maybe 40 pops for Ron Paul people.
Okay, go on.
Roughly. And what they did was when we got the ballots, they had cut that list down to 28. 28 people on that. 28 instead of roughly about 100. No one has the exact numbers, but. And what they did was they, if you weren't the party regular, if they didn't know you, basically, they took you off the ballot. And then here was another kicker, too. We had to vote for 14 people. So, like, let's say if, let's say if we only wanted to vote for one or two, we had to vote for 14. So they kind of dipped us.
And so what, there were 11 delegates to elect, and you had to vote for 11 out of the 14 names they gave you.
You had to vote for 14 out of the 28, I believe was on the ballot.
14.
They basically rigged the ballot.
And how many of the people were Ron Paul people were left on the list?
Maybe four or five. And then we didn't get. It's still kind of up in the air. Well, there's a couple people that we aren't really 100% sure if they're Ron Paul people or which way they're going to vote. But all the, for sure people that we knew were Ron Paul people, didn't get on it. There's a couple people that, might go either way, I guess, but.
Interesting.
But the thing is, that's frustrating because we followed all the rules. We did everything we were supposed to. And then in the paper, Ron Carey, I forget his name, like the state chair, he basically said that it's not a job for rookies. And that basically,
if you don't know what you're doing, we'll fuck you over, right?
Basically, you said that, Ron Paul people, article in the Star Tribune about it, that basically they didn't want us there, and that they basically just shut us out. Mm-hmm. And from what I heard, and kind of just talking to people, a lot of people think it came from the federal level, from the state committee.
Committee told the state committee what to do and how to do
they didn't want any Ron Paul people elected as delegates.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of hearsay, but the thing was that you kind of felt bad for people because Minnesota, it's a longer state, and we had people that drove, 8-9 hours over there for International Falls.
Yeah.
They wanted to vote, and they wanted, to vote who they wanted to vote for, and they just cheated us,
Yep, that's how they do. It seems like the whole Republican election process was rigged to just give it all to one guy. I mean, the whole idea that a lot of the states that did just have primaries, it was winner take all, and so McCain could get 24% of the vote, and he would get every delegate from the state. And then, of course, there are the states that go through more of these conventions, like Minnesota, they have their own games. I remember reading about Louisiana, and they did a bunch of shady stuff there too. So
the thing is that we're really organized. We had everything planned. We knew who we were going to vote for, and then we get the ballots, and then they just BS around the issue,
and people are pissed off.
Yeah, basically. I mean, You know, I don't know. I think they might have changed the rules. They might have switched the rules in their favor.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not a rules person, but.
That's but
the thing was, I do want to make another good point, actually. The Republican Party platform, mm-hmm. which is basically what the state, what Republicans in Minnesota want the party to stand for.
Okay.
I mean, half of that was Ron Paul people.
Well, I hope you get a platform out of it.
But yeah, so we had, I mean, that was a positive. And I think, you know, the establishment is getting scared. You know, because they had to cheat, you know, they had to cheat to win, and I think they're getting scared, you know, because
so 10 years ago. So let me just tell you, the National Republican Convention is going to be in the Twin Cities, right?
I'm looking forward to it.
On the street? I've heard that they have the FBI infiltrating the Ron Paul groups in Minnesota now. What, have you heard anything about this?
No, I haven't. I'm active in the Ron Paul big events, like marches and any, all the big events I'm active in, but the meetup groups, I've gotten to a few, but I'm not too up to climb that, but I am, though, I'm going to be there, and my brother lives, actually, my twin brother lives probably 3-4 miles from the XL Energy Center, so I know, just from talking to people, I know it's going to be crazy, it's going to be a surveillance nightmare.
Yeah,
I know,
they already reported, and I can probably pull this article up, but a couple weeks ago, the FBI was recruiting informants for Republican convention protesters, and that definitely includes Ron Paul people. But
yeah,
also,
well, I know it's going to be a big deal, and I'm actually looking really forward to it, and I want to do maybe some 9/11 protests. I was thinking about making a big banner, you know, for 9/11 Truth or something, but mm-hmm. I'm not really sure what the best way to go, and I was thinking about having people stay with me from out of town or...
Well, the trick is going to be, if it's a 9/11 thing, you should try to not whip it out until you know you're in front of a television camera, because there's a good chance it'll be taken down if
well,
you're
see,
just
I mean,
around with it.
And now that we're on the topic, though, I was kind of curious what your take on that. For protesting at the RNC, if you think it'd be a good idea to be with the Ron Paul March or to be a 9/11 truther what avenue would you...
I mean, I don't know. I know that Ron Paul's trying to get 15,000 people... to show up at his event and, you know, for some coverage there. As far as protesting at the convention, you know, that can be very dangerous. And in New York, they just arbitrarily arrested thousands of people at a time and put them in basically a concentration camp, some old warehouse, and it took them a few days to let everyone go from there. So I would just be very careful. I mean, you said, like, your brother or somebody lives in the city. Just know what you're doing and know where to go.
Well, because I don't really have much experience I did an anti-war protest about 3 months ago. Actually, it was an anniversary of the Iraq War, and it was like 3,000 people. I mean, they had cops, it's everyone on bicycles. It was just ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's like, you know.
So I would say... I don't know what to tell you. I would get what the zeitgeist is. And the other risk is you do these, they have these huge protests and then they don't get on, they don't get any coverage, or they get very little coverage. So, but of course now everybody's going to have cameras and YouTube and you can catch, you know, catch the pigs infiltrating and everything else. So, I would just say, you know, be prepared.
Yeah, and that's the thing I'm going to go into, you know, knowing it's going to be coming. And one thing I wanted to let you know, listeners know, is that they're kind of screwing the, that's probably a bad word I can use, but they're kind of giving the...
Internet radio, free speech, you can say whatever you want.
Yeah. So they have, for the protesters, for the routes, you know, you got to get a route. And basically, I'm just reading this in the paper, and I'm not involved with it, but just reading the paper, they're making the protesters just go the goofiest route and kind of steer them away from wherever they, you know, from where all the media is going to be and stuff. So that's kind of another thing that people probably don't realize is if you want to protest, you know, at the convention. You don't want to protest.
Do you know about where it is? Is it at some kind of stadium or convention center?
It's right off the main intersection, Interstate 94.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got Interstate 35 going north and south. I don't know, a mile or so from that. So you got probably the two biggest intersections going through the state, you know, right at the X. That's where the X Island Youth Center is at. I think it was built in 2000, but it holds 17,000. That's where the Wilds play.
So is it in that downtown area with all the walkways
and everything? It's not, but it's not. Downtown Minneapolis, you know, has a heck of a lot bigger nightlife than St. Paul does. Mm-hmm. But St. Paul, I mean, like a few examples, if you were to have it like the Target Center, where the terminal, so that's one of the logistical
nightlife. I was just kind of interested on how easy or what the formation might be, because they're going to have a huge security perimeter around that with military vehicles and, you know, these energy weapons that'll make you shit yourself. And they give all kinds of things. And you can, you know, get online and look at video from the New York Republican Convention, especially.
Yeah, not,
and that'll give you an idea what you're dealing with. No, I wasn't. But I've seen a lot of the footage.
Pretty common. It's pretty common on what went on there. So I'm really looking forward to it. Like I said, I think it's going to be I know there's gonna be a lot of who knows what the economy is gonna be like then too, you know?
Yeah.
It could be a lot worse than that right now. Sorry, man. I got a couple dogs that bark whenever.
No problem. I hope you keep listening to the network and call us in. Call in and let us know what happens.
And one more question: Is this radio show have a lot of listeners, or is it low scale or big scale, or?
It's all over the place. It's low scale. It's big scale. And we do the podcasts get a lot of listeners too. So, but it's do it yourself. You know, it's all just people sitting at home with wires plugged in their computers and just doing it for no money, just because they think they have something important to say that isn't being said elsewhere.
Yeah, no, that's how I thought it worked. I just wasn't sure if it was a bigger scale, which was fine. I was just curious.
Well, you can always give us money, and we'll crank it up to another level.
Oh, by the way, I did give you, I was one of the two people that gave a donation. So.
Oh, that's great. Well, thanks, thanks for hitting us up. Okay, peace.
$5, Ben, but, you have a good rest of the night, brother.
All right, cool. Bye.
Thanks.
And, there you had it. There's a great caller and donor to Revere Radio Network. Why aren't you a donor? But anyway, Minneapolis, St. Paul, City Pages, Moles Wanted. In preparation for the Republican National Convention, the FBI is soliciting informants to keep tabs on local protest groups. So this is, I think this is like the weekly newspaper in Minneapolis. And yeah, they arrest some sophomore at college for graffiti. And the FBI goes up to him and says, "Hey, do you want to infiltrate a vegan potluck for us? And, you know, we'll pay you, but only if we get to arrest somebody." So, that's totally fucked up. Anyway.
Food aid. This bill hits. Hello, this is Ron Paul with your weekly update for June 2nd. Recently, Congress sent the latest farm bill to the president. The bill features brand new federal programs, expansion of existing subsidies, more food stamps, and more foreign food aid. This bill hits the taxpayer hard while at the same time ensuring food prices will remain elevated. The president vetoed the bill, citing concerns over its costs and subsidies for the wealthy in a time of high food prices and record farm income. Nevertheless, this overreaching government expanding farm bill will soon be law. The truth is, most farmers simply want honest pay for honest work. However, if the government is providing competing farms with advantages, and one wants to remain a farmer, one must seek a proportional advantage from government. It is a difficult position for the farmer. Some are better at qualifying for taxpayers' largesse than others, as evidenced by the fact that more than 60% of the subsidies go to just 10% of recipients, edging out the small family farm. This entire system is unfair and demoralizing. It disproportionately benefits big agribusiness at the expense of struggling family farms. Third world countries also lose with these continued government manipulations. Agricultural subsidies lead to overproduction, which leads to foreign food aid as a form of dumping. By dumping government-created agricultural subsidies, agrarian economies are artificially kept in a constant state of economic depression. The would-be third world farmer cannot compete with the free grain, thus he and his countryman remain perpetual beggars rather than competitive producers. Also, by keeping food prices high, we keep more of our own citizens dependent on government food stamps instead of paying fair market prices for food. Free trade helps both farmers and American consumers much more than this convoluted system of subsidies, surpluses, and central planning. Newly opened markets would create increased demand for what we produce. There is absolutely no reason we trade with China, yet not with Cuba. With energy and transportation prices as high as they are, opening up trade with a country as close as Cuba just makes sense. The recent power shift from Fidel Castro to his brother Raul and the somewhat positive steps he has taken provides an opportunity to lift the embargo. Removing unreasonable confiscatory tax policies would also make good foreign policy. We need to permanently repeal the estate tax, which would again take a devastating 55% cut of family farms upon death of an owner. This tax will force the sale of many family farms and further huge corporate agriculture. Those who believe federal farm programs benefit independent farmers should take a look that after 70 years of this type of government intervention, small farms continue to struggle while large corporate farms control an ever-increasing share of the agricultural market. Subsidies for agribusiness should be stopped and the free market should be allowed to work. With commodity and food prices on the rise, Congress has an opportunity to scale down government controls and taxpayers' funding of agriculture. Instead, despite the warning sent by an 18% approval rating, Congress stubbornly opted for more of the same. Thanks for calling this update. A new update is placed at this number, 888-322-1414, every Monday morning. The written text is on my website, www.house.gov/Paul, under the heading Texas Straight Talk. Thanks for calling.